You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. This podcast is brought to you by the Racehorse Owners Association, by Fitstairs, the 2020 Racing Bookmaker of the Year, and by the Thoroughbred Racing Commentary's Global Rankings in association with the Saudi Cup. In celebration of Cheltenham and the Fitstairs Castle, our partners at Fitstairs are offering listeners money back as a free bet if you finish second in any race at the Cheltenham Festival for all bets placed from now until the 17th of February. Hi there, welcome to the show, bringing you the latest news and sharpest insight from around the world of horse racing every weekday. It is Wednesday, February the 17th, and I'm coming to you from Riyadh once again. We're 3 days out from the second edition of the world's richest horse race, the Saudi Cup. It's a beautiful day here, cloudless sky, temperatures 28, 29, a light breeze. For those of you in the UK or a particularly snowy or frosty part of the world, you're probably turning off now or throwing something at your device or screaming at me. But this is presenting its own logistical unique challenges, as I'm sure you can imagine, not least of which trying to get this podcast together. But hopefully we've got some fantastic content for you through the next half an hour, which includes catching up with leading connections out here in Saudi Arabia of some of the fancies for the big races, including Roger Teal, who runs Oxted, his July Cup hero in the Riyadh Dirt Sprint, $1.5 million, and Thady Gosden, son and assistant trainer of John, of course. They run Mishriff and Global Giant in the big race itself. So more from them a little later on. One of the great forebears of so many of the great racehorses currently racing, Pivotal, has just retired from active stud duty. I'll be catching up with Chris Richardson, the managing director of Cheveley Park Stud, and with an eye to what's happening this weekend back home in Great Britain, I'll be talking to Amy Murphy, the trainer of Kalashnikov. She's made a decision as to which race, whether it be Ascot or Newbury, she is going to run her stable star in before bigger targets ahead for the rest of the season. But first of all, it's time to check in with all the latest news back home with a senior writer on the Racing Post, Lee Mottershead. Lee, what's been happening while I've been away the last 24 hours?
Well, horse racing's biggest, highest profile owner, Sheikh Mohammed, has been in the news, and not for the first time in the last couple of years or so, for very negative reasons. BBC's Panorama last night broadcast a news story on the disappearance of his daughter, Princess Latifa, based on videos of the princess talking in a prison cell, which she forwarded to friends and which the BBC had been passed on. They're clearly exceptionally distressing to watch. It looks like a horrifying situation. It's been leading the Radio 4 news this morning over here, just before we started speaking, Nick. The UN has said it will be seeking to contact the UAE and investigate matters. The Foreign Office over here has discussed it as, has described it as a very concerning case, and it clearly is a concerning case. It's difficult, clearly, for horse racing to do much at the moment, or indeed to say much. I think people do question why racing isn't doing more. I think if the UN and the British government can't do a lot, there's not a lot that racing can do. And I think there is that justifiable fear in the background that Sheikh Mohammed is a huge employer of people in the horse racing industry. However, you have to balance that against the situation of a young girl being held against her will. And I think for a lot of people in racing, that is a extremely distressing, awkward and difficult position. And the only certainty is that this story isn't going to go away.
So far, what's been the British government's response? I gather Dominic Raab was interviewed on the radio this morning.
Yeah, Dominic Raab has been, in fact, probably speaking as we speak, Nick, on the Today programme. But the Foreign Office has described it as a concerning case, while pointing out it wasn't directly involved in the matter. And clearly the British government has major relations and major financial relations, commercial relations the government, the country has with the UAE. I think the key move is probably that of the United Nations. And it does seem as though they're more inclined now to get involved in this. They said they're going to investigate and study the videos of the BBC broadcast last night before they decide what they're going to do in terms of contact with the UAE. It's first and foremost for the young lady involved for Princess Latifah. This is clearly a desperate situation. There's been no contact from her for some time now. Her friends are understandably enormously concerned, and that is the greatest, that is the greatest priority at the moment, and everything else, to be honest, is a minor importance. But for the horse racing industry, there's clearly a spotlight on racing at the moment. Whenever this story is broadcast, there's reference to the fact that Sheikh Mohammed is a huge racehorse owner, an owner who has been pictured with the Queen on racecourses. All those things get broadcast, and it means that racing is in the spotlight, and it means that high-profile figures in racing are called on to make comment. And realistically, there isn't a lot that they can say, nor that they will want to say at the moment, because it is, as we keep saying, an exceptionally difficult position. All I would say is that for those who berate the racing industry, BHA, Racing Post, Racing Media, others for not saying much, that doesn't mean that those people don't care or don't find this to be an appalling situation. It's just that on the one hand, there's not a lot that can be done from within the racing sector, and secondly, as I've said before, there are thousands and thousands of jobs at stake in the racing industry, and that is a factor. But as I've said before, a greater concern is the well-being of that young lady.
Well, obviously a story that is way, way bigger than horse racing, but one which could have huge implications for the sport of horse racing, and one that we will clearly stay across. Lee, back to the village, though a significant part of the racing village, no bigger race than the Randox Health Grand National, £750,000, the weights released yesterday, we spoke about it quite a bit. What were the key stories for you?
Well, interestingly, and perhaps this is a good thing, we haven't heard from Tiger Roll's owners. I penned a column piece on Monday about it, about the complaints about the ratings treatment of Tiger Roll in the past and their fears for his treatment. In the Grand National Weights that came out on Tuesday, they haven't said anything so far. The most important thing is what they do with Tiger Roll in terms of whether they're happy to run him or not. As you were discussing yesterday with Martin Greenwood, Nick, I think he's given the horse a perfectly fair rating. I completely concur with what David Yates was saying to you yesterday regarding the sort of figures that would have seemed right for Tiger Roll. I think a rating of 166 looks just about on the money. And I think the majority of people have agreed with that view, and the majority of people seem pretty happy with the weights that they're given as well. I haven't picked up on many people being hugely disappointed with the ratings, the weights that they've got. And that's really because in the vast majority of cases, horses are allocated their normal rating. There's slight compression at the top. Nigel Twiston Davis's Bristol Dugai is one of three top weights. He's happy with his weight. Easy's Land was a very difficult horse to handicap, I think, for Martin. Santini is the other joint top weight. He's unlikely to run in the race unless something goes wrong early in the Gold Cup. But it's already, I think, a race that I'm really looking forward to. Martin described it as the second classiest Grand National that he's seen. For me, there's loads of quality in the race. We all missed our annual Aintree fix last year. For me, the Grand National has always been my favourite day in the racing year. It's a race I absolutely adore. As most people will have done, I picked out a couple of horses yesterday and had a few quid on. I think Cloth Cap was a popular choice, and understandably so. If the ground is right for him, and that is a question, he wouldn't want very deep ground. Ideally, he'd like good ground. It's probably going to be good to soft at best for him. But I think 10.5 is a great weight for that horse. And I thought one of Gordon Elliott's Milan native, another actual Jigginside horse, same owners as Tiger Roll. He won the Kimur at the festival last season. A couple of good early runs at the start of this season before it went off the boil. But Gordon spoke in good terms about him yesterday, and I thought he could be interesting towards the bottom of the handicap proper.
Looking at events more immediately and the Cheltenham Festival and Benny De Dieu, who has been a standing dish at the festival the last couple of years and would have been well fancied for whichever race she was going to run in, she won't be running. Don't think this has come as a surprise to too many people, judging by the way the markets have moved over the last week or so.
No, I think that's right. I think there was an expectation that we probably weren't going to be seeing Benny DeGioia. Willie Mullins had been saying not that long ago that he was weighing up the hurdle and the new mare's chase. But he announced late last night the horse wouldn't be running at Cheltenham. Hasn't been pleasing him in her build-up for the race. She'll be aimed towards the Punchestown Festival now, all being well. But Willie, as a sign of his enormous strength in depth, Nick still has the red-hot favourite for that race in Concertista, the winner of last season's Mares Novices Hurdle. She's 11-8 favourite to win that one. So disappointment for Willie and disappointment for the owners, Rich and Susanna Ritchie, but their Cheltenham Festival team this season looks incredibly strong, headed, of course, by Chacon Persoir and Monkfee. So they still go there with loads of reasons to be excited.
Well, one horse who will be reappearing this weekend, be it at Ascot or at Newbury, is Kalashnikov. And I'm very pleased to say I'm joined by Amy Murphy, who is on Kalashnikov now as we speak. How's he doing?
Yeah, he's in great form. I'm absolutely delighted with him. He's just done his final piece of work on Wednesday morning and everything went well. So it'll just be, he's had a school as well, so it'll just be a case of freshening him up now and then rolling into the weekend, hopefully.
And he is, as you've said before, a pretty enthusiastic workhorse and schooling horse by nature at home. Has he lost any of that sharpness as he got a little bit older or not?
No, he nearly buried me yesterday whipping round at a pigeon. So, no, it's definitely all still there.
But has he been catching pigeons? That's what we need to know.
No, to be fair, he's, you know, we've been really happy with him this year. And I think probably his, you know, his last run where he was obviously second behind Mr. Fisher at Cheltenham was a, you know, as good as we could have hoped for. He was, you know, obviously Peterborough wasn't our initial intention because it was right-handed at Huntingdon. But when it switched to Cheltenham, we obviously, you know, it was very much at the forefront of our minds. So we headed there. But, I mean, he was probably still just, you know, we'd obviously had the situation that the year before with bleeding, so we were minding him a bit, and he was probably still just coming on fitness-wise. And, you know, he's now bang 100% rocking and rolling fit.
Well, that is good news. Obviously, you've got a little bit of a dilemma this weekend. You can either go 2.5 miles for the Ascot Chase Grade 1 or go to the Denman Chase, which is a Grade 2 over 3 miles on Sunday. What are you leaning towards at the moment?
I think at this point we're probably leaning towards the Denman, you know, mainly for, you know, it looks like Newbury's going to get better ground. I think, at the end, and obviously, you know, it looks like Surname and Master Tommy Tucker, etc., are all going to turn up at Ascot. So I think at this point we're probably leaning towards the 3 miles around Newbury, which, you know, we know he loves.
And do you think he's a horse now that fully gets the 3 miles in a top race?
I think, you know, it's still definitely a question mark, but unfortunately, in terms of options, it's all we have. You know, there's nothing over 2.5 left-handed, so we don't really have a lot of choice. But I think certainly, ridden with a bit of patience, which is how he'll be ridden. I think he definitely does see it out. You know, you look, he was only staying on up the hill over 2.5 the last day at Cheltenham, so I think a flat 3 miles is well within his grip.
And then if all goes well on Sunday, what do you see the ultimate aim for this season being? Is it Cheltenham or Aintree or both or neither?
I think, you know, the very much Aintree is our be all and end all. We know he loves it around there. You know, if he had a hard race on this weekend and didn't get back for Cheltenham, then so be it. We'll freshen him up and go straight to Aintree.
And would that be for the Melling or for the...
Yes.
Yeah.
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 So back over 2.5 miles.
Yeah.
So in your mind, Amy, in your heart of hearts, do you still believe that there is one massive day in this horse to come?
Yeah, I think absolutely, 110%. You know, I think to come to be honest, Nick, you know, when he put the day that he played at Newbury, I wasn't sure we'd ever see him again. Now, you know, I've just never seen anything like what happened that day. And I think, you know, it's an incredible team effort by everyone at home and my vet to actually even get him back to anywhere near his best, which I think, you know, his last run showed that he's bang on the way back up to it. And I think, you know, it's an incredible effort to get a horse that's had a setback like he had back to competing at the top level.
Well, it'll be great to see him out again. Newbury Sunday looks the favourite, and it's lovely to hear he's on such good form. Amy, thanks for chatting to me.
Thanks, Nick.
Well, lovely to hear from Amy Murphy, and it would be good to see her popular stable star back on point and an interesting player in the Denman Chase, Lee.
Yeah, it is, and it's. I think it's an interesting Denman Chase in the sense that it's a race that obviously it's a great Gold Cup trial in the past, but not necessarily packed with Gold Cup horses this season. Lost in Translation obviously would be a horse who could very much emerge into the Gold Cup picture as a leading player if he performed better than he has so far this season. Clandy's Oboe, we know, isn't a Gold Cup horse. And when we aim towards the Gold Cup, and as you've discussed this week on the programme already, Nick, arguably the highest profile Gold Cup horse running at Newbury on Saturday will be going in the Game Spirit, not the Denman Chase in Champ. But Amy Murphy had a really good horse in Kalashnikov, but a horse who hasn't been able to show what we hoped he was capable of in his early days. And all yards at that level, they're really after a big stable star, a big flagship horse, and it'd be great for Amy to see him produce a better performance on Saturday.
And just as regards, so he'll go Sunday at Denman Chase, and Saturday the Ascot Chase. Just as looking at that, I posted a text to Paul Nichols this morning asking who would ride Master Tommy Tucker, because Harry Cobden will be on Surname. He said that if Sam Twiston Davis, who's won on the horse before at Haydock and gave him a lovely ride, is available and can get off riders on the Storm, he'll ride. If he's not available, then Bryony Frost will take the ride. So either way, it's probably quite a nice ride for one of them to pick up.
Yeah, absolutely. And it'd be interesting to know what Sam Twiston Davis would like to do, because of course Riders on the Storm won the race last season, a race that clearly fell apart with Surname not performing, and with the horse of Gary Moore's, whose name I've just forgotten at the moment, falling at the final fence when running a huge race. And he is trained by his dad, so I'm sure that Nigel will want Sam aboard the horse. Master Tommy Tucker came right back to form last time in that Kempton graduation chase. I think this is more his sort of race. He ran before that in a big field handicap at Kempton, and I just don't, sorry, to Cheltenham, I just don't think that is his sort of contest, and Cheltenham's probably not his sort of track. Ascot could well be a good place for Master Tommy Tucker. He'd have to improve a fair bit on what he's done so far to be shaking up a stable companion Surname, but he's an interesting runner, and I'm sure Bryony Frost is very much hoping that Sam Twiston Davis stays loyal to his dad.
Well, that's what's happening in the UK. What about what's happening out here in Riyadh? Well, some of the contenders for the big races were putting themselves through their paces on the main track this morning. One of those was Oxted, who is in the $1.5 million Riyadh Dirt Sprint. His trainer is Roger Teal. The horse, of course, won the July Cup at Newmarket last year. And I began by asking Roger what he thought of this morning's workout on the dirt.
Nick, I was absolutely delighted with it. I thought he strode out beautifully on it. I haven't spoken to Harry yet, but like I say, he stretched out nice there and didn't seem to bother by the track at all.
And has he taken the journey well? Has he taken the whole experience well?
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't be more proud of him, really. He's taken it all in his stride, and he's quite a laid-back horse, so we were confident he would, but it's always nice to, when they back it up, like, you know.
You've watched his physical and mental development. Is this the sort of thing you could have done 12 months ago, or has he really just started to become a grown-up?
No, I think the timing's right now. I think 12 months ago, no, we wouldn't have been in the right place, but I think we're getting the right place now, and he looks spot on.
So obviously you're happy with his condition, you're happy with the way he's moving over the track here. It is quite different, this dirt track, and you remember all the dirt tracks when you were campaigning running Stag in the US for Philip Mitchell.
Absolutely. I just said it looks magnificent, and it's slightly different to all the sort of typical sand tracks you get in the States, but there's like a fibre in this, and it looks lovely.
So they just sort of seem to bounce off it a bit, don't they?
Absolutely. Just like I said, they seem to have that little spring in their step, don't they? So he glided over that, so I'm delighted with him.
And the big question is whether he can get out of the gate fast enough to use what we know is his natural speed. Are you confident he can?
Yeah, like I just want Kieran to keep it simple. We'll just let the horse find his own rhythm, and he's got good gate speed normally, and he's got a good travelling gear. So if he can cope, but I don't want to push him out of his comfort zone. So we'll let Kieran just ride him as he finds him, and you know, just be confident on him, and you know, wherever we are in the race, hopefully we're picking the pieces up at the end, you know.
Well, the thing about him is he is a naturally fast horse, isn't he, even for a sprinter?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he travels so well in his races. So I mean, I'm hoping that there'll be a good strong pace here, and he can just get into his comfort zone, and once you get a horse into his rhythm, then everything seems to take care of itself.
And obviously you come to Riyadh in the middle of a lockdown. It's a pretty unusual experience, but is everyone coping with it so far?
No, everyone's, we're just all getting on with it. And it is a bit surreal, but, you know, it is what it is. But we just got to cope with it and get on.
And obviously there's a massive incentive if this horse comes through this well, and you're half thinking about Dubai.
Absolutely. I mean, like, we're taking it one step at a time, but if he comes through this really, you know, well and comes out of the race good, then we can always consider Dubai afterwards, yeah.
Good luck, Roger.
Thanks, Nick. Cheers.
John Gosden has three runners at the Saudi Cup fixture this year, two of them in the big race itself. Mishrif, who was one of the best middle-distance three-year-old colts in Europe last year, and Global Giant, who just keeps improving and went pretty close in Bahrain in November in their big race. And also a new horse from Jim Bolger's stable called New Treasure, who runs in the Saudi Derby, the race in which Mishrif was second last year. John's son and assistant Thady is out here at Riyadh supervising proceedings. Thady, how have they all settled in?
Yeah, they all travelled over well. Fairly smooth flight over, and they're all happy to be here, and things are going the right way at the moment. We'll see.
It's exciting seeing Mishrif up against the best of the Americans. Have you played out the scenario in your head a few times?
Yeah, certainly. You know, it's an interesting race for sure. Obviously, the running style is very different, and being on dirt is very different to our turf running style. But he ran okay here last year on the dirt, so I'm second in the Saudi Derby. So he handles the track, and he can get through the chip back all right, so we'll just have to see how the race goes.
Is he by nature quite a tough horse? Is he one of those sorts of horses that can take what you throw at him?
Yeah, exactly. You know, he's certainly brave, and he gets on with the job and has plenty of enthusiasm for it.
Has he travelled over well?
Yeah, he has. He's travelled over well, and he's training well here. He handles the surface well, and he's been nice and relaxed.
And in terms of distance, you know, he's a horse who got every bit of 10 furlongs in Europe. This is a mile and an eighth, so 9 furlongs round one turn. Do you think the dimensions of the race will suit him?
You know, I don't think so. He's obviously got a bit of speed, you know. The French Derby, you have to have plenty of kick at the end of that, even though it's over, obviously, mile 2.5. But I think the one turn will suit him as well, so it means you're not all fighting in position. There's a nice long run into the bend from where they jump off at the mile one here, so it means that you're not sort of having to gun them out their gates and get them up there and get them dropped in on the rail. You have a bit of time to work out what you want to do.
Global Giant's a different sort of horse, different stage of his career, a slightly more speculative entry, I guess, but he is improving, possibly, is he?
Exactly. You know, he seems to be improving. He's definitely going up in the ratings anyway. He's in great form. He's an absolute pleasure of a horse to be around. And hopefully he endeavoured to do a twit with himself on Saturday.
And it's a big call. He could have run in the 10 furlong turf race. But I know Sheikh Isa is here. We've just been speaking to him. It's a big moment for him, big runner for him here in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's an absolute thrill for everyone involved. And it's a great privilege to have a horse in the bid race with Sheikh Isa, who's obviously from Bahrain, a neighbouring country here. And the turf race was an interesting one, but we thought he should handle the surface well here, and hopefully he can run well enough.
Just roll the dice. And I'm guessing with him, again, the faster they go, the better he'll run?
You know, you don't think so. You'd say they'll probably go pretty hard up front. Last year they went hard enough up front, so we'll have to see what happens. And got Frankie on board, obviously, and he's experienced, to say the least. So we'll see what he wants to do.
And you run a horse called New Treasure in the Saudi Derby. He's a horse you've got from Jim Bolger's stable. What was the thinking behind the acquisition of this horse?
Exactly. So Ted Vaut and Prince Faisal here obviously thought he was a nice horse to buy and bring out here. And he obviously, his form was over shorter in Ireland. He wanted to drift through over there. But he's stepping up in trip now. But, you know, he seems to be handling his training well at home, and he should like the surface too. He's been tending on it well the last couple of days, so we'll have to see.
Are you finding the trip okay so far?
Yeah, you know, it's a real pleasure to be out here. The facilities are absolutely brilliant. The track is, I'd say, probably almost the best dirt track I've seen in the world, anyway. The surface is lovely. It's got wood chips in it, so it means it rides a lot kinder. And the kit bet's less severe as well. And the quarantine runs are brilliant, and the horses seem to be enjoying themselves, and that's what really matters.
Thady, thanks for chatting to me. Best of luck.
Thanks, Nick.
Well, there are so few horses, there are so few modern thoroughbreds who can genuinely be considered to be breed shapers. One has just retired from active duty. He can be called a breed shaper. Not only that, he started at a very modest stud fee, but has produced wonderful horses at all distances. He was a very fine sprinter himself. He is, of course, pivotal. He is still hale and hearty. Chris Richardson from Cheveley Park Stud joins me now. And Chris, I guess there's got to come a time when you say, okay, you've done all you can do for us.
Yes, we've always called him the Mighty Pivotal, I remember fondly the 19th of January 1993, the night he was born. He was there, I was there, and you know, he came out, and you know, there was no hesitation from the word go. He jumped up and almost told us that he was somebody to be reckoned with. And it's very special for, you know, obviously for the Thompson family to have, you know, bred a horse, you know, of the quality of Pivotal, who, you know, he's a true gentleman, a personal friend, and you know, his success has just been phenomenal over the years.
And a Cheveley Park bred through and through, because you stood his sire Polar Falcon as well with great success for many years.
Yes, indeed. And David Thompson was instrumental in saying we should buy his sire Polar Falcon. Brought him over here. He won the Lockinge at Newbury in Mr. Thompson's then red, white, and blue colours. You know, he came, stood, and you know, as I've reported, you know, it was actually the very first mating that Polar Falcon had, resulted in Pivotal, and maybe that tells you something. But it's you know, it's a legacy that's, you know, goes back a long way, and hopefully will continue on with his grandson, Twilight Sun.
Twilight Sun, of course, a son of Kailaki, a son of Pivotal. Kailaki, one of the most important sprinting sons of Pivotal, but it wasn't just sprinters that he produced, and perhaps that, Chris, I don't know if you'd agree, was what made him such a great stallion.
Nick, I agree totally. I mean, I think, you know, that's the fantastic thing. You know, he's been able to sire sprinters, you know, Group 1 winners and Classic winners, you know, I suppose we've had 32... Group one winners, and to have been the broodmare sire of 21 Group One winners as well. It's a phenomenal record, I remember we had a filly called Megahertz. Well, actually, it was named Megahertz. I sold her as a yearling in December sales for 12,000 guineas. She wasn't particularly correct, and she went on to be a phenomenal filly in America, along with Golden Apples. And I think that was what sort of set the scene for him. You know, he managed to produce the highest class of horse across the world, and you know, hit with a relatively short crop of only sort of 58 foals, I think, in his first year, but and a smaller crop in his second. But he just has continued to upgrade his mares, and I think he gave breeders, small and large, a fantastic opportunity to upgrade their mares and to compete at the highest level.
Amazing to think that in his first season he stood for 6,000, and then he only stood for 3,000, I think, didn't he, in the second season.
Those breeders twisted my arm something wicked, as you can imagine. But all good things come to he who waits, and we were very happy to have the support, and we're very conscious of the fact that that's what, you know, that was part of our remit. And yes, 6,000, great value, and he was available at 3, but he did it the hard way. He upgraded his mares significantly, and to have ended up standing for 85,000, you know, resulted in really Cheveley Park Stud being what it is today. I mean, it gave us a fantastic opportunity to bring Cheveley Park Stud up to the standards it was, you know, years and years ago, and to have put together a phenomenal broodmare band and given Mr. and Mrs. Thompson a hugely wonderful time at all levels.
Ticking off all those sort of wonderful staging posts, if you like, of a top-class stallion, as you were saying, you know, he produced a champion sprinter, he produced classic winners, he produced Group 1 winners over a mile and a half, he produced winners in the United States. He then got in that amazing groove as a broodmare sire and this extraordinary nick with Galileo, the foremost sire of the generation. So he's done it all. He's 28 now. I don't suppose he fancies retiring much, does he?
Yeah. He doesn't know he's 28, for sure. The only thing is that the dentist is having a little bit of trouble. So I suppose when people and horses get to a certain age, the teeth become an issue. But he's certainly, you know, he looks great in himself. But he does, you know, he is. You know, he is showing his age. We took a view this time last year that he was well enough to cover 30 mares. He covered 30 mares last year. 15 of the mares were in foal. We're lucky to have 6 of those mares that are in foal to him. And as you say, he doesn't really know that he's 28. But he, you know, we just feel that rather than risk, you know, something happening, you know, some sort of cardiac failure, or, you know, slipping over in the covering yard, he deserves a long and true and hopefully long retirement. I remember when party politics retired. I know we're changing the subject, but after he won the Grand National, he came here and enjoyed his retirement for many years and became a star of the show. And I'm sure Pivotal will continue to be the next star of the show for us here, along with the other boys, and will teach the other boys plenty.
Chris, thank you very much for talking to me today. Wonderful memories of a very special horse. You must be so proud of him.
Yes, Nick. He's one of those horses that he's probably one in a lifetime. But as I say, he's got the kindest of eyes. He's a personal friend and to us all here. And we wish him well in his retirement and look forward to continuing to watch his progeny perform at the highest level.
Chris Richardson there from Cheveley Park Stud, with an appreciation of the very special career of Pivotal, who's been retired from active stud duties. Now we've got all points of the compass covered today, because I'm talking to you from Riyadh. We've heard from Amy Murphy and Chris Richardson in Newmarket, and we're now off to Hong Kong with his weekly bulletin. Here's the croc, J.A. McGrath.
Hi, Nick. This is an important week in Hong Kong racing for a couple of reasons. It's Hong Kong Gold Cup Day on Sunday, and as the name might suggest, it's one of the really big days in the calendar. There's also the Hong Kong Classic Cup, second leg of the four-year-old Triple Crown, to be run on the same card, and I'll have more about that in a podcast later in the week. But there's another major reason why it's noteworthy in Hong Kong this week. Here's the story. Sometime last week, Sha Tin played host to a very important visitor in Carrie Lam, the chief executive of Hong Kong, which is known officially as a special administrative region of China. She's in overall charge of Hong Kong and everything that happens there, which includes, of course, the government restrictions imposed on residents during the COVID pandemic. And I should point out, Hong Kong is currently in its fourth wave, though numbers of both infections and deaths are thankfully falling. Mrs. Lam met Hong Kong Jockey Club Chief Executive Winfried Engelbrecht-Bresges to see for herself firsthand how the testing procedures at Sha Tin worked, and I'm reliably informed that she was most impressed. It is remarkable how Hong Kong has not missed a single day's racing because of the pandemic, and despite the closure of betting shops and crowds at a bare minimum when permitted, interest in racing has never been as keen, and betting turnover has remained buoyant. Punters have learnt new ways. Old-timers have taken to online betting. In typical Hong Kong style, the masses have adapted. A record £184 million was bet on last Sunday's Chinese New Year meeting. Now it's over to Mrs. Lam on the question of whether crowds can start coming back. The Hong Kong Jockey Club hopes more owners and members can return to the track in numbers, and they are hoping, fingers crossed, for a crowd of between 5,000 and 8,000 for Hong Kong Derby Day on March the 21st. Time will tell what government really thinks. In the meantime, let's look at the Happy Valley Wednesday meeting. Still no Joe Moreira, who leads the Jockeys Championship by 28 wins. He's still under suspension. And while he's on the sidelines, his old enemy, Zach Purton, is aiming to capitalise on the Magic Man's absence. Zach has even picked up two choice rides from John Size, who is the major backer of Moreira's. And I think both can win. They are race 5, number 1, Savaquin, who still looks ahead of the handicapper, and race 9, number 5, Wind and Grass, a consistent old customer who can come good in the finale on an attractive card under lights. But my best bet comes in race 6, number 7, Charity Fun, an Irish import who ran a screamer first time up in Hong Kong last month, coming from near tailed off before halfway. He's bred to get the trip, and I think if he gets a half-decent pace, he'll win with a little in hand. Take him to win, and in a tote swinger with number 8, Flying Mighty, and also another one with number 6, Vinci. That's all for now. We'll chat about the weekend in a later podcast.
My thanks to Jim McGrath, and very good to hear of Carrie Lam's productive visits to Sha Tin. We'll be hearing from Jim later in the week, as he was saying. Thank you also to my other guests today, to Chris Richardson with his reflections on Pivotal, Amy Murphy confirming Kalashnikov goes to Newbury on Sunday in preference to Ascot on Saturday, and to my guests here in Riyadh, Roger Teal and Thady Gosden, with positive bulletins on their horses. We build towards the weekend, and there will be more reflections from Riyadh as the podcast continues in the next few days. But Lee Mottershead is still still with me and hopefully has a winner for you for this afternoon.
Well, we were speaking a little earlier in the podcast, Nick, about a Nigel Swiss and Davies horse, Riders on the Storm. I'm going to go with another one from that stable, Good Boy Bobby, in the 240 at Weatherby. He's a good little racist. The top two horses, Midnight Shadow and Good Boy Bobby, both very smart performers over fences. They're now over hurdles in this race, and I take Good Boy Bobby to win under Daryl Jacob.
Lee, thank you very much. Thank you for listening. This is a reminder that this is your final chance. Today is the final day to take advantage of the offer from our partners at FitzDares that gives you your money back as a free bet on anti-post bets at the Cheltenham Festival if your selection finishes second. That offer ends at midnight tonight, Wednesday the 17th of February. That was Wednesday, February the 17th. Thanks to all my guests. Thank you for listening. We'll see you again tomorrow from Riyadh. For now, bye-bye. You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with FitzDares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary.